Hello, I'm Oliver Wong.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes. You're listening to Heat Rocks. Every episode, we invite a guest to join us to talk about a heat rock, you know, fire, flammables, an album that bumps eternally. And today, we will be deep diving together into Vunje Moto, the 2002 album by Zimbabwe's late singer and guitarist, Oliver Mutukudzi, better known to most as Tuku. It started with an experiment. Zimbabwe's beloved Oliver Mutukudzi, in his own words, said, quote, "I looked for a sound the guitar couldn't make in a guitar. I've always been experimental, but it was a blessing in disguise because I went on to pioneer a sound that was later labeled Tuku music," end quote. Known afterwards and for the rest of his career as the man with the talking guitar, Oliver was a global icon and ambassador, and a gifted artist who used his platform for activism, lightly addressing social and political and cultural issues while at the same time creating melodies built from traditional drumming sounds and his own insight sung in Shona. Vunje Moto, or Burning Embers, is an album about a world on fire. Under the leadership of Robert Mugabe, Zimbabwe's controversial leader, the album was released in 2002, the same year a violent and contentious election extended his rule and his reign. Floating between a gorgeous combination of wisdom, affirmation, and observation, this album to me personifies Wangoro, or Take Time to Analyze. If not familiar with the language, the album's light musicality lulls you into the feeling that there is hope, despite a nation in peril, economic uncertainty, and a crisis, and despite the cover art being a map of Zimbabwe on fire. A year after this release, Oliver was asked, "What is the most consistent theme of your music?" He answered, "Probably my most consistent theme is strength of unity, divided we fall." This album was his 44th. Incredibly, he had 23 more to go before he passed at the beginning of last year. Singer Yvonne Chaka Chaka called him the soldier with the big voice. On Vunje Moto, he's the soldier with the big heart, with an album that, according to writer Jim Foley, is, quote, "the herbal tea of contemporary African music, calming but with sufficient zing, Mutukudzi's affable vocals to keep it tasty to the last drop." I like that. It started with an experiment, an artist determined to create a new sound. Mission accomplished. Vunje Moto is a heat rock.
Vunje Moto was the album pick of our guest today, singer, songwriter, and Gemily. Since emerging out of the Boston music scene a few years ago, he's racked up accolade after accolade, culminating in this fall's Giver Taker and Gemily's official debut LP. Pitchfork described it as, quote, "radically gentle and confident," while Consequence of Sound says it's, quote, "papered with transformation, but through lenses of tenderness." Intriguing. Giver Taker is also a panoply of Njemeli's myriad influences, be it Sufjan Stevens or Born Ruffians, or the focus of today's episode, Oliver Mutukudzi, who wasn't just a giant in Zimbabwe's music community, but was also a hero to many in nearby Malawi, where Njemeli's parents emigrated from. It's a delight to have him on the show today to help us dig into one of his childhood idols. Njemeli, welcome to Heat Rocks.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Wow, what an introduction.
You have described Tuku's music as being, quote, "embedded in my DNA," unquote. Why is that?
It's just something that I've always heard. So, like, my parents, I have a very, like, musical family. My parents raised us, like, listening to music always, because they were always playing music. Whitney Houston, Dolly Parton, Bob Marley, just, like, the pop classics. But even the backdrop of that was always Oliver Mutukudzi. And they just had a bunch of his tapes and a bunch of his CDs. And whenever we would go on road trips over the summer, they would play his records. And even though I love pretty much all every musical thing that my parents have ever introduced to me, Oliver Mutukudzi affected me the most.
Was there something about this album in particular? Because as Morgan pointed out, I mean, his catalog was incredible. I mean, so prolific. So why this particular LP? What makes this a heat rock for you?
So my parents used to play two records from his, like, predominantly. This one and another one that I'll have to remember the name of. But I found myself, like, deeply emotionally affected by the songs on this record. And, like, it came out in 2002, and, like, I was in the second grade when that happened. And I remember listening to this album with my parents in their car. And I remember just, like, not understanding what was being said, but having an intensely emotional reaction because of the emotion in his voice, and also just being, like, completely in awe of his guitar playing. Like, he made me want to play the guitar.
You actually addressed something I was just about to ask, because, and you have to forgive my ignorance here, but if I'm not mistaken, Tuku mostly sung in Shona, which is the dominant African language in Zimbabwe. But it's not a language that I believe it's not as prevalent in Malawi, which is where your parents are from. So did you and your parents understand what Tuku was singing about in his lyrics?
My parents did.
Okay.
Because they speak Chichewa plus. They're just like very... They just speak a lot of different languages. And also, like, because they were, like, grown-ups, they just, like, looked it up, you know, like, if something was unclear.
Yeah.
And so I think I only ever asked them what one song, the meaning behind one song, because I was so much more focused on, like, the rhythm of what he was saying and also the emotional impact of the chord progressions and melody.
So much of what I've read about him is describing him as a pioneer of sound. So my question to you is, in terms of guitar playing, what makes him a pioneer of that sound? And what was it about that sound and how he played that attracted you?
I had always been, like, interested in the idea of the guitar, just because I remember, like, growing up and seeing, like, Prince and stuff. And I was like, that's really cool.
Indeed.
But I was also, like, a gentle... like, into, like, gentle music as a kid. And, like, Prince was, like, too hard rock. Prince. It just wasn't easy enough listening for my young and tender ears. And so I just remember, like, hearing his guitar playing, Tuku's guitar playing, and recognizing that, A, it was something that I had, like, never heard before. And B, that it exemplified what I feel like his vocal style exemplifies as well, which is softness and a lullaby like power, but also like strength and playfulness. And it was just like so beautiful to me. It was just so beautiful. And I was like, what? I didn't even like know that it was a guitar. Like, I was like, what is that he's playing? My dad was like, yeah, he's playing the guitar. And then I was like, you know, wow, like, that's something I don't see often, is like black people playing the guitar. Like, you don't say, like, maybe I could do that too.
Just to go on a brief tangent, because I don't know if we've ever had an extended conversation on this show before about the guitar as an instrument. And I was just thinking of how, you know, I heard years ago that one reason why the violin is such a powerful instrument and used so widely in at least classical music is because its tone is very reminiscent, or its timbre is very reminiscent of the human voice. And then you have the piano and just the spectrum of chords and melodies that you can generate on those keys. And the guitar to me it's not reminiscent of a human voice. I don't know if, in terms of its musicality, it can achieve quite the same levels of complexities that you might be able to find on a piano. But what I appreciate about the guitar, and especially listen to Tuku's music and his handling of it, is just what you can get out of just a few strings, right, wrapped around a piece of wood. And that it's just, I feel like this word is so insufficient, but it's so pretty what he does with the guitar, especially on this album. And it's just a reminder of that what is, I think, in some ways, a relatively simple instrument can yield all of this kind of complexity and affect and emotion within it. And sorry, this is a very long-winded way of asking, when you're listening to his music, and in particular his guitar playing, what is it that you're hearing, and how has that translated into your own songcraft?
I think what I hear is like pretty much like everything you described, like the guitar plus. So like I just hear influences of like jazz guitar and Hawaiian. I hear like harp, and I even at times do hear like the, in terms of his guitar voice, it does sometimes remind me of a violin in the way that it like sweeps over you. Now, it doesn't like sweep like a violin does, but it like, I feel like it has that same quality of humanness to it that the violin can sometimes awaken in folks. And beyond that, because I had like a super peaceful childhood, like my parents are lovely and like my family, they're lovely. And so like there's like a lullaby quality and a quality of like safety that I hear in these songs because of such like, I wouldn't say like I mean it's like happy memories, but more than anything it's just like super tranquil memories.
Yeah.
There are also a couple of these songs on this record that are in a minor key. And like I physically registered that and thusly had a response to that. Mm. And there's a song on this record called Ndakuvara. And I remember like in the chorus, he's singing like he is crying for help. And I just like really resonated with that for some reason. And so that's the song that I asked my dad, like the only Oliver Mutukuti song I've ever asked my dad like what it meant. He was like, yeah, well, it's about this like, you know, farmer, and he's at his farm and he's like taking care of his animals, and then his like cow falls on him and he's like trapped underneath his cow and he's like crying for help. I was like so deeply like to my like 7-year-old and 8-year-old like mind, that was like the most horrifying thing that could ever happen to a person. I was like, oh my god, he's trapped under this cow. Like I was like really into like, I was like for whatever reason incredible feeling like a lot of sympathy for that like very specific situation. And I could hear, and I think I could hear like the suffering in his voice, and that like translated to me, so that like something like someone like a cow falling on you is like not really like something that, you know, when I say it like that, it doesn't like engender any intense emotion, but like when the way he was singing it and my father's description of that, I was like, wow, this must be like a huge trauma for him, that like this experience, like I was just completely emotionally enraptured in that story, and I didn't know what it was about.
I'm curious, what else were the golden hits on the family road trips?
Golden hits. Well, he has another record called Tuku Music. So I think that was the one that my parents played the most.
Mm-hmm.
It's got some classic bops. And then they would play Celine Dion's like greatest hits.
That's a great album.
I love Celine Dion. They would play The Immaculate Collection, another Madonna's greatest hits. Mm.
This is a very eclectic road trip soundtrack you got going here.
I guess so. And then they would hit Bob Marley. It was mostly compilation, so it was like,
yeah.
I think Bob Marley's greatest hits is Exodus, mm-hmm. or that's the name of his.
Right.
And it, yeah, whatever. But so that, and also Michael Jackson, Dangerous, specifically for some reason.
Ooh, interesting choice, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then occasionally like Garth Brooks and stuff. And that's the point at which me and my siblings would complain. We were not at all interested in country music.
Oh.
We'd be like, if they put on Dolly Parton, we were like, mm.
I mean, one of Tuku's biggest fans in the U.S. musical world was Bonnie Raitt. So yeah. There is a little bit of country crossover there, you know?
Yeah. I think my parents like have like a, in my opinion, like pretty sophisticated like musical palette. And I can see like the through lines between their favorite artists.
It's funny because I was thinking about how one of the things that people often say about Texas is just how open it is, and that just to get from any point A to point B can take, you know, hours and hours. And so I would imagine having a good set of music to accompany that is pretty essential to just surviving those long drives. Where were you road tripping to? Were these vacations? Were you visiting friends or families in different parts of the state?
Yeah, so we would road trip to different parts of the state. I'm from the suburbs of Dallas, a little town called Richardson.
Yeah.
And we would go down to San Antonio, Houston, Austin, or Galveston. And it's like three to 4 hour drive.
Yeah.
And it's also like Texas is pretty flat. And so I have memories of just like a flat horizon and just like,
right, for
the highways, there's like cows on either side, and there's farms, and you can see the storm miles ahead, and you can see the storm miles behind you. And so that in and of itself for me was like a very lulling, like it was just such like peaceful scenery.
Until you imagine one of those cows falling on you and trapping you.
Right. Exactly. I was like, I see cows all the time. What do you mean they can fall on people? Exactly.
That is traumatic. And just to say, I've done those long drives through Texas. My mother's from Waco. And so we would go down there for family reunions every year. And this was back in the day. So the playlist was limited, like super limited. And there was always a point where we would get to some part of the state where we'd be like, well, it's just going to be country now. I wish it was Garth Brooks. Okay. It was just some dude nobody had heard of. And you'd be like, oh, okay, well, damn. And so I think that's why, thank God there were a number of singers in the family to keep it, you know, to keep it fresh. So yeah, we are kindred spirits in the road trip thing. You guys just had better music, sounds like. It says something about an artist that a whole style of music is branded after you. That from afterwards, it's essentially become known as Tuku music. So if you could, what is Tuku music exactly? For the layman, for those not familiar, like if you could describe the sound and what it is about Tuku music.
It's this like gorgeous, like rhythmic hybrid of kind of what I would describe as like traditional Zimbabwean like percussion with like kind of in my opinion like Buddy Holly style guitar playing.
Mm. Mm.
I hear like old rock influences, or forget Buddy Holly, like B.B. King or something, just in the way I just hear like very old rock but also like a pop vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And like, so if B.B. King's guitar was like unplugged and played through like a nylon string guitar and kind of like slowed down a bit and then like bolstered with like rhythms where the tune is like in six, I think that's it.
That's Tuku music.
That's Tuku music. So I couldn't be any less clear. But that is that's my hot take.
Just to shift the conversation for a sec here is, I definitely spent a few hours this week going down a Tuku spider hole since I had never heard of him before and just wanted to get a sense of context. And it was really fascinating reading about his life and his influence. I mean, this is someone who is one of the biggest superstars in Zimbabwe music history. And as we talked about, I mean, incredibly prolific. But I thought what was, you know, was most notable is that, especially over the last roughly 20 or so years, he walked this very fine line with someone who was very much embraced, it seems like, as being an artist of the people, but managing to survive, you know, a very, very dark chapter in Zimbabwe history during the Mugabe regime, by avoiding being too overtly political in his songwriting. And it seems that Tuku tended to make more oblique critiques of the social and political crises happening in the country, which is in contrast to sort of Zimbabwe's other biggest star, his friend, his colleague and countryman, Thomas Mapfumo, who had to go into self-exile for, I think, over a dozen years, mostly to avoid being persecuted by the Mugabe regime.
Yeah,
I guess I don't really have a question here. It's more that I'm just fascinated by the ways in which our notions of protest music, especially coming from, I think, a U.S. context, because that phrase tends to evoke very particular kinds of examples. But protest music can take on many different forms depending on what the political climate is like, and that the fact that you know, in Tuku's case, you know, I can't say that he wanted to stay in Zimbabwe. All we know is that he did. And that in order to walk that tightrope, he had to make certain decisions artistically that someone like Mapfumo didn't make, but Mapfumo paid a price for it. And I thought this sort of just the complexities of these things are really, really fascinating, especially for someone of his particular stature.
Yeah, it's incredibly interesting. He was like, yeah, certainly not apolitical, but just like,
right,
gentle political or something, in a way that didn't like that talked about social issues without like explicitly criticizing the government. But also a lot of his songs have like morality tales.
Right.
Which aren't like, he's not saying like the government is doing this.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of rashing people in his work, like especially this album. Like, Gondo, it keeps repeating in the song. It's like, don't be like the eagle who, when it doesn't catch, like, whatever, the animal, the rat, it still, like, is clawing at the grass. And I feel like that's, could be seen as, like, a very vivid, like, anti-government corruption, like, statement.
Right.
But it is, like, not.
It's coded.
I feel like he kind of codes his critiques in, like, folk tale, folklore.
Right. And an arrangement that makes you feel like he's not saying what he's actually saying. It makes you feel so happy. Mm-hmm. At least that was my feeling, my takeaway. That it, as I was saying to you before, it wasn't until I started looking at the titles, I was like, hey, wait a minute. He's saying some things here. But he's almost in a sonic way killing you with kindness. He's saying these things and he's making his commentary and he's doing it in such a cryptic way. And you feel so good about it that you're just like, well, damn, this isn't about uprising. This is about a farmer whose ox falls on him, which could also be a metaphor for something else, too, if we look deeper into it. But that was my takeaway, that I feel so good. And I feel so good listening to this album that I had to go back and really think about what he was saying, what he was talking about.
One of my favorite anecdotes that I read specifically about this album and about him is that I guess a government official stepped to him and asked, like, what are you actually saying on this album? Because I think they were inferring that there were some critiques being thrown at the Mugabe government. And his reply was simply, well, you speak Shona, don't you? Which is to say that it is what it is. You can, you know, if you want to know what it says, like literally you understand the language. That's all you need to know.
Right.
That's some true G shit right there. Like
to say
Tuku said, pull up. That's what Tuku said. Pull up. You want to know what's happening in these songs? Pull up.
We will be back with more of our conversation with Njemeli after a brief word from some of our sibling Max Fun podcasts. Keep it locked.
Listen, I'm a hotshot Hollywood movie producer. You have until I finish my glass of kombucha to pitch me your idea. Go.
All right, it's called Who Shot Ya, a movie podcast that isn't just a bunch of straight white dudes. I'm Iffy Whiteyway, the new host of the show and a certified BBN.
BBN?
Buff black nerd.
I'm Alonzo Duraldi, an elderly gay and legit film critic who wrote a book on Christmas movies.
I'm Drea Clark, a loud white lady from Minnesota.
Each week, we talk about a new movie in theaters and all the important issues going on in the film industry.
It's like Guess Who's Coming to Dinner meets Cruising.
And if it helps seal the deal, I can flex my muscles while we record each episode.
I'm sorry, this is a podcast? I'm a movie producer. How did you get in here?
Iffy, quick, start flexing.
Bicep, lats, chest. Who Shot Ya? Dropping every Friday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, I'm Biz.
And I'm Teresa.
And we host When Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting.
Whether you are a parent or just know kids exist in the world, join us each week as we honestly share what it's like to be a parent.
These are really hard questions.
They are really hard questions.
I don't have any answers for them.
I don't either.
Sack of garbage.
No.
The end of the show will just be 5 minutes of Biz and Teresa crying and screaming until the outro is played.
So join us each week as we judge less, laugh more, and remind you that you are doing a great job.
Find us on MaximumFun.org, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back on Heat Rocks talking about Vunjimoto, the 2002 album by Zimbabwe's Oliver Mutukudze with Njemeli.
To go on another brief tour here, one of the other albums that you had suggested we could chat about was The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. And while we have dedicated an entire episode to that LP with the great music writer and scholar Joan Morgan, I'm very curious to hear from you. What is it about that album that makes it a heat rock for you? Because if I'm doing the math in my head right, I mean, you would have been alive when the album came out, but you would have been pretty young. So I'm wondering, was this something that you grew up with? Was it another road trip LP? Like, what is your relationship to The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill?
Yeah, it was not a road trip LP. My parents were, like, too old to listen to modern music at that time, unless it was Celine Dion.
Yes.
But I remember hearing doo-wop, that thing, on the radio, and I was like, this is fire. And a couple of years later, like when I hit my teenage years, I started listening to the Fugees, and it like brought me back to Lauryn Hill. And I used to like skate, was a little skater punk. And so I would go out and like skate to the Fugees and Lauryn Hill. And I was like, this is just straight fire. Like, this is the heat rock. Like, it's so timeless. Mm-hmm. I remember, and it's another one of those things, like I remember hearing when I was younger to Zion. And I didn't know what she was talking about. But like Ndaku Vada, I was so emotionally impacted. I was just like, oh my God, like, I don't know what this is about, but it sounds like serious and holy and sacred and important. And like, as I got older, I like understood the meaning, but she just has one of those incredibly expressive, absolutely like heartbreaking voices. And I just, that's my favorite part of music is the voices, and she just has the voice.
But instead I chose to use my heart. Now the joy of my world is in Zion.
What was it about to Zion for you?
It just has such a beautiful build. And also like the guitar playing. Like kind of acoustic.
Right.
It's kind of like a squiggly line to Oliver Mutukudze for me to like connect those two. And then like the instrumental, the arrangement is just beautiful. Mm-hmm. And it just like starts off not sparse. It starts off like, you know, like nice and like bumping and like full enough. But then by like the end, there's like a choir.
Yeah.
And then like, it's so beautiful, like the different parts of the choir singing and the choral harmonies.
Now the joy of my world is in Zion. Now the
the very end when the bass and like the harmonic instruments drop out and it's just the voice with like a drum roll.
Yeah.
I was just like, what is this? There's not a lot of songs that I've heard that sound like that song.
I've always wondered if Lauren's other kids were like, yo, where's my anthem? Like, where's my song, you know?
I thought about that too.
For sure.
It's tough. It's tough. Well, bring this back to Vahone Zemoto. What is your fire track off of this LP? I mean, this is an album that you've been listening to for close to 20 years. Is there a particular song off of here that is just, it gets you every time?
Yeah, it's Wongo Oro. Wongo Oro.
Take time to analyze.
So this is actually like a newer heater for me. Like it used to be in Dakuvara, and then like in the past 3 years, I've just really gotten into Wongo Roro, and I've listened to it so much that like I looked up the lyrics for the first time maybe like 2 months ago.
Oh wow, okay.
And like I was like looking at the lyrics and like singing it with the song, and I was like singing it perfectly because I've just heard those words in those rhythms so much that it like made sense very easily, like a puzzle piece. And so that song is fire. I love that song. I love the way that it builds from the pre-chorus to the chorus and how it goes into like kind of like a more like traditional Western chord progression there, but in such like a popping way. Ugh, I love that song.
How about you, Morgan?
Ziva Nguva. That
one is tight.
Yes, that one does it for me. And I think it's the beginning is so beautiful to me because it's a collision of a lot of instruments. Mm. I love the hook. It's powerful. Those background vocals are powerful. They make me want to turn up, you know, at the very beginning of that song. It's strong. It's loaded. It's complex. So you know I have to hear it. It's so pretty. So that's my fire track off that one. Mm. What about you?
Well, it looks like we each picked a different one, which is nice. I went with Moto Moto, which I don't think is fire in the sense of its intensity or energy. It's quite the opposite. I think this is really one of the most languid songs on the entire LP, but I just love how incredibly mellow it is. And I was mentioning earlier that there are parts of this album, in particular, his guitar playing, that really, for me, was reminiscent of Hawaiian Slacky. And it may be just because overall the vibe has kind of this very almost stereotypical island feel to it. But then you also have the soprano sax on that song, which adds a whole other sonic element. And I was thinking, I mean, I'm used to hearing, you know, tenor and baritone sax. I can't remember the last time I sat with a song that had a soprano sax on there. So I just think that kind of meld of the different sonic elements really stuck with me. Maybe it's because I used to play woodwinds in middle school marching band, but sort of that kind of sound that I also associate with like the clarinet. It is very vocal. We were talking earlier just about things that sound like a human voice, and the soprano sax and clarinet have a very vocal quality to it, which really adds to everything else that's happening in this particular song. Can we talk a little bit about favorite moments on the LP? And I'll start things off here. And for me, one of my favorite moments was at the very beginning, just the how the song Tapera opens, or Tapera, because almost every other song on this album begins with Tuku on guitar, which kind of makes sense. It's his album and he's a guitarist. And sometimes a couple of the songs have very similar opening notes. So Tapera instantly stood out to me because it's the only song on the entire LP. And it also happens to be the last song that opens with piano instead. And maybe because it is the last song, that difference, that sonic difference that the piano adds really lingered with me for that reason. Morgan, how about you?
Same
favorite moments.
Same favorite moment for the same reason. It was an unexpected end with the piano, but it feels to me like the benediction. It feels like the end of a service. And if the whole rest of it is, you know, lullaby, worship, celebration, that song to me is a benediction. It was just a pretty unexpected way to end an album, and I love it.
Mm. And Jemily, how about you? Do you have a favorite moment on here?
Okay, I think and I wish I had like the lyrics pulled up, but in Pugenica, just like more of an upbeat situation. Like first of all, I love his backing vocalists are on fire always.
Yeah.
And in Pugenica, there's a part where, he does this a lot in the record where it's kind of like a call and response. And I just really love I think it's like the pre-chorus. There's like a circular call and response happening where he's like, and then they're like, Kanibaranjanika. And it's just like so like beautiful and like jovial sounding. I just love rounds, things like that. So it just gets stuck in my head, and it's just like such a nice little rhythmic and melodic flourish that he's got going on.
Yeah. No, great, great, great pick. Great pick.
What's the song on this album that if you had to, or if you have not already, what's the song that you would love to cover?
And I guess, would you even go there? Because some folks, it's too sacred. You know, they don't want to try to cover an album that they've lived with for this amount of time and with this amount of intensity.
Yeah, I probably will never, but it would be Ndaku Vada. Just because that was like my first heartbreak. One of the first songs that ever made me feel like a painful emotion.
Ah.
If you had to describe this album, we always ask our guests this. If you had to describe this album in three words, what would they be?
Sacred.
Mm. Mm.
Soft. And I guess burning. Yeah.
Mm. Slow burn or fast burn?
I'm going to say slow burn.
Yeah, I mean, Burning Embers, that's a slow burn right there. I mean, literally, you could say it's in the title, right? So
yeah.
There you go. Well, we always like to leave our audience with something else to step to, another heat rock. So if folks are really into this week's LP, what else would we recommend they check out next? Morgan, do you want to lead us off?
Sure. I would say if you like this album, stay in Zimbabwe and get into Leonard Tembo and Leonard Dembo, an album called Chiteke, that I just found about 6 months ago on a fluke, going down a rabbit hole of, I wasn't even working on anything related, but I found it on Spotify and the rest is history. Sururu Wako is one of my favorite songs. He pioneered a sound of a mbira. So he plays electric guitar, so it's in the same family, but it made me feel the same way as in preparing for this chat. So I would say start with there and keep going.
For me, I mentioned him earlier, but I would suggest going with Thomas Mapfumo and his album from 2002, Chimurenga Rebel. And as I mentioned, he's Zimbabwe's other, you know, most beloved musician. And I think listening to both him and Tuku's albums from that same year offers this mini encapsulation of differences in style and attitude, which is worth contrasting. And I think if Mutokudzi's album is more stripped down and acoustic, Mapfumo's is more dense. It's certainly more electronic. And I think most important for me is that Mapfumo's band busts out one of my absolute favorite instruments anywhere, which is, as Morgan mentioned just a moment ago, the mbira thumb piano, which is just such a vital part of the Shona music making tradition. And it's funny because even though we've never had an extended conversation about the guitar as an instrument on our show, this marks the fourth time that we've talked about an mbira, which is better known, I guess, here as a kalimba. We've talked a lot about the kalimba on this show. And so I'm like, we need more thumb piano, and one can never get enough. And certainly on this album by Mapfumo in particular, you get plenty of that delicious mbira. Last but not least, and Jemli, what would you recommend our audience members check out after this Tuku LP?
I'm going to say, if you want more Tuku, check out the record Tuku Music. It slaps. That's my second favorite. It's a slappy.
That'll do it for this episode of Heat Rocks with our special guest, Anjemeli. Be sure to check out his debut album, which just came out this fall, Give or Taker. Congratulations on the new album, and thank you so much for joining us on Heat Rocks today. And let us know where people can find you on these interwebs and such.
You can find me on Instagram at Anjemeli. That's A-N-J-I-M-I-L-E. Find me on Twitter at Anjemeli Music. Facebook, Anjemeli Music, Anjemeli.com. Find me on Grubhub at Grubhub.com. Anjemeli. I need to get rid of my LinkedIn. That's it.
There you go. You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wong, and Morgan Rhodes.
Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup.
Heat Rocks is produced by myself and Morgan, alongside Christian Duenas, who also edits, engineers, and does the booking for our shows.
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and our executive producer is Jesse Thorne.
We are part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.